voices. Unedited, uncut, unfiltered, unflappable. Bringing you glory to the green. Representing One Nation. Mean Green Nation. It's time for the Mean Green Nation podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, guess what? It's another episode of the Mean Green Nation podcast. And that episode is 44. I just found out. So, as always, I have Miss Greg Godecker with me, the Mean Green Nation podcast. Last week I was in Brooklyn, New York, and I was still recording while on vacation. You know, like one of those people that check their emails while they're working. yeah, back home now. Good old San Antonio, Texas. Where are you, Greg?
I'm swerving and Irvin, and I just want to say that you did a wonderful job last week, and nothing can stop this guy from podcasting. Nothing.
Which is, I think, that's not something that my wife thinks is a good thing, you know?
No, she'll get over it.
All right, so in an effort to kind of make up for last week, when I didn't talk about soccer as promised, because we just kind of ran long. So I'm going to start out by talking a little bit about them right now, before we get into all the our normal football stuff. One thing is that I totally spaced and I forgot to go to the game that was at Incarnate Word down here. I've been tired. Like pretty much 2 weeks. Like last Saturday I was in New York. The previous Saturday I was at the lake. In between, played rec league playoff games. School started again. I was just tired. Like I was excited not to have anything to do yesterday, and I just immediately fell asleep.
Excuses.
Yeah, I mean it was kind of an excuse. But I woke up today, and the good news is that your North Texas Mean Green women's soccer team came down to San Antonio and whooped ass. Basically, they won 2-0 against Incarnate Word. It was not a very good soccer. Well, they're a good soccer team for their division. I think they had yet to allow a goal. And North Texas is just really good. I think was it Carla Pineda's on? She's on a like top drawer soccer, top 100 squad. So is Jackie Kerstein. They're continuing basically what they did last year and the year before that. I mean, they're a juggernaut. And that's good to see. If you want to see a North Texas juggernaut, head down to the Mean Green Village and go watch them ball out. Hey, we got a listener. Listener says, morning. So, yeah. They went 2-0 on a goal from, who scored? Oh, goodness. I know Carl Pineda provided both assists. The first goal came from Taylor Torres, and who also played in the under-17 Mexican national team for 2 years. So, wow. So, we got some talent. And I think the other one was Davis. I think she scored on the header. Let me confirm that.
So, who do they play coming up? Who's their next game?
Well, they come back up to Denton. And so, they'll be there on Sunday in case you want to go watch them. Watch them dominate. I forget who they play exactly. Let me look that up, too. Kansas. There it is. Yeah, Kansas is a big game. Michelle Davis scored. Second goal in 3 games. She was coming off the bench. She is a former Longhorn. She's coming off the bench. She's fast. Like, our entire forward line is pretty fast. Our midfield is solid, and we have an awesome playmaker. Even though Carla Pineda, basically, she plays forward or, like, midfield. She's really kind of that number 10. The person that links the attack in the midfield. You get her the ball, she starts creating space, creating shots. That's why she's averaged, well, I don't know what she's averaged, but I think last season she had 11 assists. Is it 11 assists or 10 assists? I don't know. I mean, her freshman season, she had 7 assists. 7 assists her sophomore season. 10 assists last year, and already 2 this year. And both of them were in this game. Some of that is because she takes all the corner kicks, and we have a really strong set-piece game. Anyway, go check out the game against Kansas. It's going to be Sunday. I don't know what time it is. Let me check that right now. It's at 1 p.m. So I don't know what the weather's been like in Denton. It might be god-awful hot. But, take some sunscreen. Take an umbrella. go watch the game, because they're going to go ball out and kick ass. And there's a little soccer team.
So what, before we stop on the soccer or the European football talk, give us your bold prediction for the Kansas game.
Oh, I think UNT is going to win. They're going to win 2-1.
And what? Give me something bold that'll happen in the game besides them winning.
A bold thing in the game. I'm going to go ahead and say that Rachel Holden scores a goal. I don't know how bold that is, but she's been. She hasn't.
No, that doesn't seem very bold.
Yeah. All right, fine. So she's going to score on a bicycle kick. There it is.
Oh, there we go.
She's going to bicycle kick it in there. I don't know if she's ever scored a bicycle kick. So there you go. That is kind of bold.
All right.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. They're fun to watch. It's kind of hard to keep up with them because you can't like check out the highlights after they play. Like you can't check out the highlights from last night. Even though I looked immediately after, I felt awful that I forgot about the game. So there you go. There you go.
All right. Thanks for that soccer update, Adam.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I guess we'll just hit out some of the North Texas headlines that, you know, have gone on this week. I don't know if you guys saw, but the it was Champions Day this past week. Coach Mack brought in Seneca Wallace to speak, which I don't know how much of a champion Seneca Wallace is, but granted, he made it to the NFL. He played quarterback on a couple teams, Seattle, Cleveland. So, granted, he made it there, so he can be a champion in his own right. And he played well for Coach Mack, so there's obviously a good relationship there. But they took a picture together, and the picture made its way to the internet. Mm-hmm. And in that picture was the white uniform, and mm-hmm. it was the white helmet. And you could see that our white helmet is going to have the green sow on it, or the green eagle on it. And it looks like it's going to be worn with the white uniform. So just saying, I have a feeling those are going to come out for the SMU game. And their stormtrooper looks, white unis, white helmets.
What time is the game against SMU?
I believe it's at 6.
Okay. Well, that is not that. All right. Yeah. Listener, Mr. Samuels here says it's the son of Worm. In case you're like new to this whole North Texas thing and you don't know what the sow is, it's son of Worm, meaning it's basically the diving eagle that we have. Just like, you know, the old eagle looked like a worm, the one that we debuted with 2 years ago. We didn't debut it, we reintroduced it. That one is the worm. It looks like a worm. And so this new one's the son of Worm because that's the whole thing. That's what everybody calls it. It's not its official name, but just in case you were confused. I know I was confused when I first got to North Texas and was like, what is everybody talking about? What is sow?
Yeah, and it got me thinking, you know, I don't know if anybody saw the high school teams playing last night on television, whether it was Fox Sports Southwest, whether you went to the game. But how many high school teams out there have better helmets than North Texas does?
Well, I mean, you mean like it historically speaking? I like our helmet. I'm looking at my replica ones right now. The green with the diving eagle, the white diving eagle. That's awesome. I like that one. Look,
we have a badass logo. Let's just say it. Our logo could be very badass, but it seems like we just go generic on the helmets. I mean, how about like we have that white helmet and then we take that, you know, chrome looking eagle that we had from the Heart of Dallas Bowl and put that on the white helmet, you know, make some flash or something. I don't know. It's just frustrating when I see a high school team that has better stuff than we do.
All right. Well, I would say that right now, I don't know that there's any other team that definitely has a better logo than we do. I mean, better helmet than we do. I mean, some are more classic, some are more iconic. But, I mean, if we're all starting from scratch, then I don't know if there's a team that definitely does have a better helmet that in college football. I would say that maybe Oregon does because I just like the wings, and I think that would be better our style. I always like that Philadelphia Eagle, the wings on the helmet like that. So maybe that, but I do agree. Our logo's pretty awesome, and so I think prominently displaying it inside the helmet is pretty awesome. I just think, you know, if you were saying that our old one, with the North Texas script on it, was awful, then I'd agree. But I like the diving eagle. In fact, I'm going to get it and I'm going to put it on my desk right now.
All right. Well, good for you. In other news, I don't know if anybody saw this either, but offensive lineman Garrett Gunter, I think he came from Trinity, the JUCO, who was awarded a scholarship just this past week, I believe, he got arrested for public intoxication.
Maybe celebrating his scholarship a little too much.
Yeah, and I mean, coaches, they were talking him up this week that, you know, he was pushing Chris Miles, you know, right tackle. He was making his way into the depth chart, and, you know, I just don't know why kids just do that. So, well, anyways.
I know why people go get drunk on the weekend. I mean, I, too, was a college student, and I am a person in this world. I mean, I understand that. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you're going to get a little reprimand or something like that. It's not the worst things you could do, and it's one of the things that people do. So you can't even say that, like, you know, it's unforgivable or something like that. He's going to get talking to, a little slap on the wrist, probably maybe even a little bit more, because he, you know, he's just a guy. You know, he's not like a star player or something. So yeah. I don't know. But wait, hold on. I want to go back to the uniform. I like the white with the green Diving Eagle. Are you a fan of, like, the black helmets? I know everybody else likes them. I think, like, the players like them a lot. I know in basketball, the players generally preferred the black road uniform to the green. Where do you stand on that before we move off this topic?
Our black helmet's okay. It's nothing spectacular to me. Yeah. It's just okay. I mean, they did the little Seattle thing where they had the little eagles. That adds a little flair to it. But again, I just think that, you know, the eagle on the side, I don't know, it just looks kind of boring. I like the logo itself, but I don't know, I just want a little bit more flash. Again, that Heart of Dallas helmet that we had, that's been my favorite, and that's why I bought one of those helmets.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I like it. I think it's what our helmet should have been since we debuted that logo. Was it 2007 or something like that? 2008. It's been a while, but whenever we got that logo, we said it prominently displayed it. So it's been a long time coming. I don't really know if I want a chrome helmet or I want a gold helmet or this, that, and the other. I mean, not that I don't like messing with the uniforms or something like that. I'm not a traditionalist or something, but I feel like we're not really being different. We're just being like everybody else. Like when Oregon was doing every kind of uniform under the sun, that was kind of their deal. I mean, they didn't really have, you know, any uniform. Like, think of, like, Oregon's uniform from 1992. Have you any idea what that looked like? Nobody does.
I do.
Well, I mean, you know the colors. Well, my point is that was kind of their deal, is that they tried to be the ones with the kooky uniforms, and that was, you know, part of their deal. And then everybody else has got getting it now. Like Oklahoma State tries to be that team, West Virginia, TCU definitely. I mean, and it gets to the point where you don't even know what the teams look like anymore. And so being a team that has a classic look makes you stand out a little bit, you know?
It doesn't make you stand out to recruits, though. And that's the big thing. These kids want to look flash. They want to look good. They want to look sharp out there on the field. So we need to step up the uniform game when they come on campus and they try on something. They want to look good and feel good in it. Otherwise, you know, we know how superficial kids are. They might not come here because they don't like our uniforms. It's crazy.
I'm saying is that we don't need the edges of those things. I mean, ultimately, you need a team that's going to win. You know, like, you know, and I hate to be this guy bringing that up, but, like, Alabama hasn't really changed their stuff, you know what I mean? And they get big-time recruits because they're going to go to bowl games and play national championships and this, that, and the other. I don't mind it. I think it's cool having a surprise black alternate uniform, except if you're Daryl Dickey, apparently. I like having, you know, like, three different helmets. I just kind of like keeping them within our color scheme, I guess. Black, white, green. Black is apparently an official color now. But, you know.
If you're playing, you're not going to get noticed. Alabama doesn't need to get noticed. They have Nick Saban. On the other hand, we need to get noticed sometimes off the field and on the field. And, you know, like Coach Mack says, A recruit turns on the TV, sees North Texas playing well. Who is that? You know. Well, you know, if we're looking sharp in the unis, too, they're going to be like, oh, man, who's that over there looking all nice and clean?
Well, all right. There you go. Again, we're late to that game. If we were doing this in, like, say, 2002, and they're like, wow, they're going to bowl games and looking, you know, awesome. Like, I want to be on that team. But when we were winning bowl games, we had the plainest, jankiest uniforms ever. It said North Texas, you know, it was dark green. You know, like, that time has passed. Oregon already jumped on that train. They're already leading that train. There's, like, four other teams that have that, you know, reputation. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Is like, you're not going to do anything like that. Well, maybe
my last thought is we can do better, so we need to do better.
That's true.
So, big news, you know, Zach Whitfield, go Mean Green. You know, they kind of broke the news on this, but looks like he's trying to get back on the team. Our secondary could use some help, could use some experience back there. So what are your thoughts about that?
I like it. I mean, he was always, I guess, kind of a Mean Green Nation favorite just because he was going from running back to cornerback. And I think it's the thing everybody does on NCAA. What year did they last leave off? 2011. You're like, oh, this guy's fast. Yeah, let me go ahead and move him to corner. But he actually made that transition. He played well. He was, you know, and he had that awful end to his career, basically, or what would have been his career, against UTSA, where he was trying to make a play, didn't scoop the ball up, and so we lost the game. It didn't lose us the game, but that was our last opportunity to continue the game. Yeah. So I think it'd be awesome if he could come back. I don't think it would take too much to get back into the swing of things, assuming that he's been keeping himself in shape. And it might even help him a little bit if not, you know, getting beat up by everybody else. I don't know where he'd slide in immediately, but I think definitely by the end of the year, he could be, you know, in the rotation, especially if we get some injuries.
Yeah, I agree. So this morning, North Texas, they have their last scrimmage before they really start their preparations for SMU. And some of the things have come out about freshmen making some impact. So don't be surprised when Coach Mack rolls out the two deep or the depth chart and you see a guy like Roderick Young, a big defensive tackle, over 300 pounds. He's been making waves throughout this camp. DeAndre Bradley, we've heard his name mentioned a couple times, at wide receiver from Cedar Hill, a 6'2 burner. And then the other two kids are Preston and Brooks. Preston was out of Oklahoma. He was one of a pretty big recruit out of Oklahoma, actually. And Brooks was out of White House, a smaller school, but he certainly looks the part. They're both defensive backs, and, you know, they could make the depth chart or two deep. I know Preston's been getting a lot of attention from the coaching staff lately. So those are just some of the young names, young pups out there. Of course, every time, you know, everybody wants to know who are the young guys making the impacts out there on the field. And those would be the four guys that I would say that are true freshmen that are making impacts right now. There's some JUCO guys that are making impacts, but those freshmen, those are the guys' names we've heard the most.
And I like that. You need that. It shows it shows that the recruiting class, I mean, with it, the recruiting efforts have been successful, right? You're getting guys that are freshmen, underclassmen, that are challenging some of these other guys. And that's good. You know, it means that we're getting talent in here. If you get guys that can play, it doesn't matter what year they are generally. I mean, obviously, a really talented senior would play over a really talented freshman. But if you have a really talented freshman making plays, it's good for the program overall. It means that the future is not so dim.
Right.
Did you hear that Charlie Strong was saying about his Texas Longhorn squad, that if there's a tie, it goes to the underclassmen?
Yes, I did hear that.
What do you think about that?
I think it's good because I think it puts some more pressure on your veterans to... He's basically challenging the veterans that you need to step your game up an extra level. Otherwise, you're going to lose your job. And I think that's okay when you've struggled the past couple of years. You're just winning six games. You're not like a a Texas team that's consistently winning 10 games like they were with Mac Brown. So it's okay. They need to change something to get back to being good. But if you're North Texas, I don't know if I'd necessarily do that. You'd want that experienced player that, even if their talent's similar, maybe you want to throw them out there just because their experience gives them the edge. I can see, though, as a coach, why it makes sense, because if they're already even in playing level right now, and I put the freshman out there, there's a chance that he's going to get that experience, and then his level when he's a senior is going to be twice that of what he was as a freshman. So you're really just growing your program if you do that.
I think that the problem with that, and I think this kind of bears out some of the stats, I think Bill Connolly this week was just kind of talking about teams with more seniors being better, just because they teams with more upperclassmen, juniors and seniors, being better than talented teams with, you know, freshmen, sophomores, because, you know, it makes sense that football comes down to a couple of plays. You know, a freshman makes a mistake on making a read, and what would have been, like a 5-yard gain turns into a 20-yard gain. You know, it's a game-changing kind of thing. Changes points, changes scoreboard, this, that, and the other, right? So it's that kind of thing that I think would be the biggest drawback. But then later on, those guys, if you get, like you said, you get a lot of playing time when they're freshmen and sophomores, they're going to be that much better when they're juniors and seniors. So, and I think, yeah, if you're coming off a down season, I mean, it's kind of hard to be like, well, I mean, we're going to give it to the guys that have been here in the program for a while, when those guys in the program haven't necessarily contributed to a winning team. So, yeah. Right. I just thought that was interesting. Considering we're getting all these freshmen out here, and considering we're a couple of people that are in the game, I said.
Yeah, it is interesting. And finally, for my North Texas headlines, I don't know if you saw it, but President Samostrick had an interview with the Denton Record Chronicle. He had some interesting things to say to their reporter, as well as some things that didn't make the newspaper, what Brett Vito pointed out. Basically, he said that we need teams that get national attention because, like it or not, that's one of the biggest ways schools get recognized. So obviously, our president, he wants to see our athletics rise to a higher level. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's good to have our president. He's done a lot of good things not related to athletics. And I'd like to see him get into the athletics more, you know, challenge the status quo, you know, raise the standard that we have at North Texas that so many people think is low. What's wrong with raising that standard? It may be hard for him to get a change, but who knows? The Board of Regents may, you know, fall in love with all the things that he's done, you know, in academics, and they may trust him more, and he may put pressure on the athletic program, and we may see a rise in that. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that I kind of agree, and I think that he's kind of – isn't it Seamstrisk? Isn't that how you say his name? I don't know. I think that he's really getting everybody that's been on a message board for pretty much ever excited because he's echoing their comments. I mean, people say this all the time. You see it on, like, every 10th thread on every, you know, mid-major and below school, you know, that, athletics really drive these things. If we want to be a Tier 1 university, we really have to have a quality football program. I mean, I think that was the argument that UTSA made when they even started a program. It's a lot of these, like, the ones that are jumping up, going from FCS to FBS, are kind of making the same statements. You know, if you want to go to the next level, we got to go to the next level in football. Pronounced similar to mattress, says Todd Samuels. That's how you say seamstress or whatever. Yeah, we're awful. Yeah, and I kind of agree with him. Like, I mean, if we already have football, we already have basketball, we already have these sports. So to not be excellent in them, I think, would be, you know, ridiculous. Like, at least to strive to be excellent. I mean, and you can kind of break this down from, you know, the history of higher education and, you know, like all this. You can go all the way and you can have a long discussion about it. But I'm of the mind that if you're going to have these programs, why not be great in them? You know, if you're going to have an MPA program, why not make it great? If you're going to have a psychology program, why not make it the best you can make it? And I know that there's some scarcity there, that some money doesn't go this way, so you can't necessarily, there's not enough money to go around everywhere, but I think this is one of the things that we can be good at. We can be really good at, like in football and in basketball. I mean, you look at the soccer team. They mine the talent-rich North Texas area to get really good North Texas players, like talking about region, and to come to the UNT soccer team and kick ass, you know? And, you know, I know they face different challenges than big-time college football does, but it seems to me that that we should at least be better than we have been, you know, given our resources and things. I think we shoot ourselves in the foot a lot. So if you're just saying, yeah, let me remove obstacles on the way to making ourselves at least as good as we can be, then why not? You know, and I agree with him.
Yeah, I hope he has some sway for the men's basketball team because, you know, he came for those of you who don't know, he came from UNLV and they have great basketball programs there, or they take basketball seriously. And he probably walked into the super pit in those first couple games. He's like, what the hell is this? He's like, this is not basketball. What am I watching? Where are the fans at? So yeah. That's one area where I hope that he challenges the athletic director and says, we need to make some definite improvements. You know, in the super pit itself, the facility, and then, you know, with the team on the floor.
Yeah, and that's another example of one that could definitely be better and has shown that it could be better. The basketball team was pretty awesome. It was like the hidden jewel of North Texas for a while. They're going to NCAA tournaments. They were always in the conference title game. They were winning some belt games. I guess you can say, cause this team's not even winning conference USA games. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it was building up. The momentum was building up. Everybody knows that Johnny Jones is putting together a great product. And, you know, like, it's basketball is a, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's easier to turn around a program. Because basketball, you can get one or two guys, all of a sudden you're one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, you can get one or two guys from the area, and all of a sudden we're one of the best teams in the conference, better teams in the conference. And right. It's a matter of getting them here, and then that fills the stands, and that puts money in the university's pocket to upgrade things. And so, yeah, I mean, you make a lot of money going to the NCAA tournament for the program for, you know, a handful of years afterwards. So, yeah, we need to be getting to the tournament, at least that first, second round. And then we can talk about something later there. Yeah, I agree with you, man.
Good deal. All right, I think we need to get into some North Texas football. I mean, we're in football season.
Football season.
High school football. High school football started. One thing I want to do is kind of, we've talked so much about the quarterbacks the past 3 weeks. I mean, we beat it to death. Yeah. We've told our opinions. And, you know, obviously it's going to be McNulty unless something unforeseen happens. Something, the coaching staff just, you know, snipes us and is like, DeMarcus Smith, starting quarterback. But it probably wouldn't be that. It'd be like, Josh Greer, starting quarterback. And then the whole fan base would just, their heads would explode, except for Josh Greer's dad. But I want to do like a unit preview. Like we go offensive line, wide receiver, running backs. You know, we'll talk some about some of the guys at those positions that we're looking forward to. And we'll just basically, we'll say, is that unit improved from last year? And okay. I want to just leave out the quarterbacks today. Okay. We do have one question in buy or sell about quarterbacks, but for the most part, let's focus on the other areas of the team because I don't feel like we've given them their due diligence.
Yeah, and I think this is a thing that happens always in when people start talking about football. They're like, well, the quarterback. Let's do it. I'm excited about this.
Cool. So let's start on the offensive side of the ball. And the offensive line, let's start there because they're replacing a lot. And what are your thoughts as far as who do you like on the offensive line and are they improved from last year?
I like Caden Kirby and I like a couple of the other guys, what they've shown here and there, what people have said about them. But I think if I just put it into a sentence, I would say that they are not necessarily as talented or experienced as last season, but they're going to be better in performance.
That's a fair statement. Yeah, I like Kirby. Obviously, it's good to have the quarterback or the offensive line back. It helps with that transition. Mm-hmm. Sam Rice, he looks like he just one of those offensive linemen that kind of like Wybarbo, you know, that nasty mentality. It just attacks the game. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play. As far as if they're going to be improved or not, I think that they'll be improved in run blocking. I think we'll be able to run the ball with these guys. But the right side of the line, which is kind of still up in the air, I think those guys are going to struggle with the pass block. I think, you know, Rice and Michael over there at left tackle, I think those guys are okay handling a pass rush. But the right tackle, as we've learned this week from Vito and other guys, that, you know, Chris Miles, that position's still kind of up in the air. A lot of people had him penciled in as a starter. He struggled in the drills at, you know, the pass rush. And then you have Micah Thompson over there at guard. He looks okay at guard. He struggles sometimes a little bit in pass rush, but it's not as bad as what Miles looks like, and he's not as much on an island as Miles. But I think where that right side of the line, you know, who's the starters against SMU, and can they be able to pass block enough, give, you know, McNulty enough time to throw the ball?
So I guess one of the good things is that we're going to go up-tempo, and also we're going to get the ball out quicker, right? Everything's going to be quicker. So we shouldn't need to see, you know, 7-8-step drops, you know what I mean, where McNulty right. needs to stop, scan the field, and, you know, our line needs to be a wall, basically. So I think that'll help in that regard. I guess the question mark I have is whether or not they can create the kind of holes that we'll need to have an effective run game. And I think I wrote about this last season, towards the end of last season. I think I tweeted out, I forgot why I was looking at it, but I was looking at just the recaps of SMU, just things at SMU that we posted or something, stuff like that. And I saw like the recap of the SMU game, and then I started going through some of the recaps towards the end of the season. And I think a trend was that like our offensive line just really couldn't create holes. We were not, you know, running the ball as well as we could have. I think at one point the sports information department had to resort to getting just like really, really, really positive in the write-ups. Like, well, we sucked recently at running the ball, but hey, last season we sucked and then we went on a run. So that's probably going to happen now. Woo! You know, that was kind of they're hoping for that. And we had a couple like decent games running the ball, but that was kind of the dirty little secret. And some of that you could say, well, the defenses were stacking a line, so that way, you know, so we couldn't pass, and they were daring us to pass, and that's why we couldn't run the ball. And that's partly true, but it was like that the previous season too, when we had Derek Thompson, who grows in stature with each passing month. He could challenge the defense to keep him honest, and yet we still had some struggles running the ball outside of a couple of big games, like, you know, like the end of the season against was that Tulsa, right? So that's a long-winded way of saying I'm really interested to see how well we can run the ball with this offensive line.
Yeah, I think, again, if we can run the ball, it sets up a lot of other things. So offensive line, kind of a push for both of us. We expect some improvement in some areas and to struggle in other areas. You know, maybe as the season goes along and the unit gels together, then I think we could say that they should be improved from what happened last year. Because they just we put them on such a high level, that group, last year. We were expecting them to dominate because of all the experience that they had. And I think, you know, moving Lemon out to right tackle, that kind of threw him off his game. And it kind of threw everybody else off their game. And they really just never were able to gel and create the same force that they did in 2013.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so those big uglies will be blocking for our running back group, which we'll talk about next. In the running back group, Coach Mack called it his best group since he's been here. Are you buying it?
Yeah, and I said this before, that I like our running back group. I've always kind of liked our running back groups. But I think you could definitely say that we had a heavier top and a thinner bottom, like in Coach Mack's first season. Like we had like Brandon Bird, and then was it Jimerson backing him up? And then behind that, you didn't really have – you had some question marks, not proven guys. I think this season we are top to bottom. I think we're – if I was going to say to you, well, you know, turns out we're going to need to give Jimerson the ball 22 times, would you be okay with that? You're like, yeah, he can handle that. I'll be okay. If you're like, well, we got to get Ivory – you know, 22 times, give him the ball. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess, maybe, but yeah, I'll be confident in that. Yeah.
I wouldn't be confident in that, but that's okay.
I'd be more, I'd like to see what would happen. I wouldn't expect him to dominate, but I'd be interested to see what happened. There's other guys in previous seasons where you're like, I don't know if that's going to be able, he's going to be able to hold up, or I don't know if we're going to get the production that we need. But I think that's a little bit of Coach Mack kind of hyping things. In as much as that we've had some really good running back groups previously. I mean, Reggie Pegram, Anton Jimerson, and Brandon Bird was a pretty nice, you know, 1-2-3. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty good. And I think this year, you look at those top three guys, Jimerson, Ivory, and Wilson. But then you also look at guys like Tucker and Porter who have had good camps, they've had good springs, and, you know, there's been talk about them, you know, getting some carries. I don't know where they're going to be able to get carries because the way I look at it, I think Wilson will probably get between – he's going to be the bell cow. He's going to get like 15 to 20 carries. And then I think you see Jimerson, he'll probably get like 7 to 9 carries. I think Ivory – I don't know if he'll get 5 carries, but I see him getting at least 5 touches, 5 to 7 touches. So that's like, you know, 27, 28 carries, 30 carries a game. And so depending on who has the hot hand, somebody might get more, obviously. But I don't know where those other two guys, where they kind of fit in. But I like our running back group. I think there's a little bit of everything in there. There's some power in there. There's some speed. There's some explosiveness. Each guy brings a different, you know, skill set to the table. And I think that makes our running back group very dynamic.
I agree. There's nothing really I can take away from those comments there, man. I mean, like I said, this was ideal. Like, Brandon Bird was our power guy. Reggie Pegram pre-injury was power and speed. He's like a combo. Antoine Jimerson provided the shimmy. So, you know, game-breaking ability. And I think that's kind of ideal. If we can get that, and if this group has what they had and plus a little bit more, you know, and they have some upside, yeah, I'll take it.
Cool. All right, I'm going to split up the tight ends from the wide receivers because I think they're a little bit different. So what are your feelings about tight end?
I mean, just really Marcus Smith, Marcus Smith, Marcus Smith, Marcus Smith, Marcus Smith. That's really all I'm looking forward to seeing. Not that I don't think anybody else is going to be quality. Obviously this guy has the talent, you know, as you said on each episode this season, that you think that he has the ability to go to the next level. So, yeah, I kind of want to see him do that. I want to see him break out and, you know, start getting mentioned in by Mel Kiper Jr., you know.
I don't know if he'll quite get the, you know, the reach the big board of Mel Kiper.
Yeah.
But I think the tight end group is going to be improved from last year. I think Marcus Smith, again, we beat him to death. But I think Chris Loving's ready to step up. I think he's kind of similar to Marcus Smith. He's very athletic. He can create some mismatches. And, you know, they were high on him coming from Blinn. He struggled here early. But I think he's got his act together, and I think he can make an impact. And then some of the young guys that Kelvin Smith, he was a freshman. He'll probably end up redshirting. And one guy that I was kind of surprised about that we haven't really heard anything out of camp, the kid from Den Geyer that created the big stir, the quarterback stir, Kevin Dillman.
Yeah.
Really haven't heard his name tossed around. A lot of people were high on him, thinking that he could come in making an immediate impact. But, you know, maybe he's struggling a little bit with the transition to tight end. You know, I don't really know, but...
Well, isn't Caleb Chumley going to go play tight end, or at least that's what everybody's speculating?
everybody's speculating that. I want to give him some time. Give him some time at quarterback. Let him try and grow. Let's see how the system on offense looks before I move him to tight end.
I mean, that seems only smart. I think you can catch up on tight end things a little bit quicker than you can on quarterback. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know. All right, here's a question. What is an A level of production for the tight end spot? You know, Marcus Smith included. But, you know, just anybody out there, not necessarily any one person, that if you look at their stats and then you look at their, like, the internal stats, the ones they don't put on the box score, you know, like, making the right plays, making the right blocks, you know, sealing the edges, that kind of thing. What's an A level for North Texas of production that you were, you know, like, this is all based on expectations, you know, and what you think they can achieve. So what do you think?
Well, last year, Marcus, he had 15 catches, 238, 6 touchdowns. I think he should probably A-level double that. Not the touchdowns. I think his touchdowns 6 to 8 range, but I'd like to see 30 catches and that 400 to 500 yards. I think if we get that from our tight end, that's A-level to me. I think that's raising the bar a lot, and I think that's, you know, that would be really good.
Do you think we got A-level production last season?
From our tight end group?
Yes.
No, I'd say B-minus. Because he did catch 6 touchdowns. He did have that connection with Andrew McNulty. He was a threat in the red zone for us. One of our only really playmakers, guys to score touchdowns. So I'd go with B-minus. I don't think that he stood out a ton, but I think that he did enough to, you know, kind of get recognized and kind of, you know, we've seen his talent. We've seen him flash potential. And so I think we're just hoping he can take that next step. And I would just stick with B-minus for last year.
Yeah, and he put up all those numbers, pretty big numbers, despite, you know, basically having, what, C-minus play from quarterback all through the season. Like, he had a really great season.
Or say F.
It was definitely F early. It kind of maybe raised the average a little bit. I mean, that was the other thing I read in there. You remember when Dan McCartney was hyping up Andrew McNulty for almost throwing 300 yards? I was like, well, was like, that's a something there. Yeah, continuing.
One other tight end that I didn't mention, but I think he could play a big role in the offense is Willie Reinhart. Because we know how Coach Mack likes to run the football, and I think Reinhart definitely our best blocking tight end. And Coach Mack, it doesn't matter, you know, what offense we run, he's going to tell Coach Canales, you better have a damn good run blocking tight end, and I think Reinhart could be that for us.
I agree.
All right, the next big group, wide receivers.
Like I said, every time we talk about wide receivers, I mostly feel bad for Carlos Harris, that he's the only one out there. And, like, if he has a normal game, we're like, well, you got to step up. Or, you know, maybe the beat writer's writing things like, well, you know, there's no playmakers out here. Yeah, that's kind of hard. All right, so I guess what's the question again? Like, who am I excited to see? I'm excited to see the two freshman guys. Richard freshman dudes, T. Gurry in particular, and then I guess what was the second part of the question? Who am I excited to see? What I think they're going to do?
Are they going to be improved from last year?
Yes, they do. And again, you know, the problem with like running the run game, all these games, they're dependent on each other. You know, the run game's doing well, then the pass game will do well. If the pass game's kicking ass, it'll be easier to run the ball. But if, you know, like we saw, like we just talked about 10 minutes ago, if the pass game is god awful, it's going to be a little hard to run the ball. So, right. So yeah, in this one, are they going to be improved? That's a function of the quarterback, right? Is the quarterback going to be improved? Is he going to find the open guy? Is he going to stare down a guy the whole time and throw interceptions and thus, you know, limit everybody else's opportunities? Maybe. I don't know. I will say this, that I think I expect that we'll get a lot less drop balls. Like, Carlos Harris catches everything. I mean, he rarely drops anything. And I think Darius Terrell last season, for all his size and his talent, he dropped a lot of passes. A lot of passes. And I'm going to go ahead and just say that we're not going to drop so many passes. And so we'll be better. There you go.
I look at the wide receiver group combined with tight ends and running backs, and I think top to bottom, it's the best group of playmakers and explosiveness that we've had since Coach McCartney's been here, since 2011. I think the wide receivers, when you add in T. Goree that we're expecting big things from, Rutherford, the 6'5", we're hearing the good things about Bradley, a 6'2 burner, the 6'2 JUCO kid, Thaddeus Thompson, his name's been mentioned.
Turner Smiley. When you add,
yeah, Turner Smiley has had, you know, he made some plays at the end of games last year, but, you know, he's Carlos Harris's roommate. Carlos expects big things from him. He's a guy who could stretch the field. I think the wide receiver group is definitely going to be much improved from 2014, and I think there's a couple guys in there that could really be the difference in our offense being, you know, stagnant to being explosive. You know, McNulty doesn't have to be pinpoint on location with a guy like Rutherford. He can put it up and say, go get it. You're 6'5", bro. You know what I'm saying?
That's basically what we did with Marcus Smith a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you have that as a quarterback, when you know that you don't have to be, you know, great, you know, Tom Brady, put it on in between the numbers, it makes you feel a little bit more comfortable. And again, the other guy I didn't mention, Darvin Kinsey, who I don't know if you saw Jamal Marshall's Periscope video, which was classic and awesome. And he said that Darvin was one of the wide receivers that's caught his eyes and catching everything and putting moves on. And that was the thing with Kinsey. We knew he had the athleticism and the explosiveness, but he struggled with consistency to catch the ball. If he's starting to catch everything, now granted we're not in game scenarios yet, but if he's catching all that stuff, that's even, I mean, that's really good then. Then you start to get really excited about the wide receiver group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you're saying there. I, you know, like I said, because it's practice, you run the risk of getting excited about practice all-stars. And I'm not saying any of these people are. I'm just saying you run that risk. There's lots of dudes, and you know, anybody that's played some sports or even just kind of been in work environment. You know those people that when the stakes are very low and it's time to practice, it's training session, they're awesome. But then you get them in front of, you know, some people, and it's time to do it when it's time to do it, and then they can't do it. I don't know how you figure out who is who, but those kinds of things exist. And, you know, it works the other way, too. Some people don't practice well. They go in the game, and then they just kick ass. And that's the danger of saying, well, you know, if you don't practice well, you don't play well, because that doesn't necessarily work. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I've been excited. I wasn't down on the receiving core last season. I do agree that this is probably our most talented available group of people. I mean, we got a guy to catch the ball and could, you know, take it all the way in Carlos Harris. We got a guy that does take it all the way when he returns kicks, Darvin Kinsey. And then we have some talented freshman guys with some speed and size. That can you ask for more? I don't think so. I mean, it's really just some guys that can, that have the ability to make plays. Combine that with the talent and in the backfield, I think we'll be solid. And we promised not to talk about the quarterback, but I think the quarterback position will be better than it was last season, even if it's just okay. If it's just okay, I think we'll be a lot better. We won't be historically bad like we were last season.
Damn you for talking about the quarterbacks.
Well, you have to. I mean, we're talking about these other, you know, the specialists out here. I mean, you know, they got to get the ball somehow.
Greg doesn't have to. I mean, whatever. Yeah. I mean, should be playing the sound clip from Adam or Adam
from me,
Iverson over there.
Practice.
We're talking about practice, man. So yeah, that sums up the offense. Generally, we think they're going to be improved in all areas: running back, wide receiver, tight end, offensive line, maybe. So I think the offense could be fun to watch if things come together at that, you know, unspoken position.
Unspoken, yeah.
All right, let's move over to the defense. Where do you want to start? Defensive line. Let's start there.
Like I said, I was excited about everything I saw in the Periscope videos. Again, that's practice. That's a scrimmage. It's a specific drill. It's easy to rush the passer with abandon when you don't think there's going to be a run play happening. So that said, the JUCO kid, number 50, he looks awesome. Pretty much there's a lot of dudes on the squad that look like they can get to the passer. And we kind of already had this conversation. So I'm excited about him. There's my person to watch. I just want to see what he has in game situations, third downs, you know, getting jump in there, get to the passer. And will they be better? Can I say they'll be the same? And that means they'll be pretty good. Because I think we talked about this before, like 30 sacks or something like that. We asked whether or not, over or under, were they going to get to 30? And I said they'll get to 30. Right. So, yeah, they'll be that good.
Great. Well, will they be better at stopping the run, though?
I'm going to say yes. Yes.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Because one of the guys that I'm excited about, Roderick Young, watching him practice, hearing the things that I've heard that other people don't hear.
Just bragging over here.
Sources have told me breaking news. Hit the breaking news.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
But Roderick Young, I think he's going to be a guy that helps stuff the run. Helps the linebackers out, too. You know, keep the big uglies off the linebackers to make the plays. So I think the defensive line is going to be improved. You add a guy like Combs. Roberts another year, DeLonga another year getting better, Austin Orr getting better. So, yeah, I'm excited about them. I will want to mention Chad Polk. It's kind of funny. I asked, there's a guy who puts out a huge draft profile on, you know, everybody. You know, yeah. His name is Dane Brugler from CBS Sports. And he was mentioning, he had his top 10 list of guys from like the group of five. To watch out for this year. And I mentioned to him, I was like, you know, watch out for Jamal Marshall, you know, 6'3", you know, track speed, linebacker hitting, you know, playing corner. And he was like, yeah, I'm watching Marshall and Chad Polk. And I wanted to be like, Chad Polk? I mean, it's nothing against Polk because the dude puts out tons of effort and you love to see that. I mean, he embodies what Coach Mack preaches all the time. He goes out there on the field, gives it everything he has. He gets to the quarterback. I don't know if he can make that next level jump. You would have to project him maybe like that outside linebacker, defensive end type. But again, I don't know if he could set the edge. But at North Texas and the competition he faces, he can get to the quarterback. So it'll be fun to watch him in his senior year. But again, defensive line, both the defensive tackle and defensive ends, I'm expecting a lot of improvement. I think Coach Patrick on the defensive line does a hell of a job of coaching and recruiting, and I think he deserves more than a year-to-year contract.
Yeah, no, you're out here advocating for him. Are you going to get 10% of that contract when he gets a longer one?
I don't know. I need to go into the athletic director's office, Coach Mack's office. I demand that this guy get some money.
And a long-term deal. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to criticize them last season's team because we're comparing them to the previous season team, which is awesome. So, you know, you can only compare a team to itself and like what you think their potential is. And, you know, added to that is the fact that Dan McCarney is a defensive line coach. He's a big defensive line guy. And so you really want to see, you know, outstanding play from that group of guys. And, you know, like they did. They performed well in 2013. You can't get awesome, you know, superb production every season. And a thing that made last season's team look less awesome than the 2013 one. But they played well. They put up some nice stats. They looked bad a couple times. They were not as, and a lot of that was again comparing to the previous season team. So, yeah, I expect them to be good and solid this season. I don't know if they're going to be outstanding and be historic, but, you know, they'll be good.
Yeah, I agree. They'll be better than last year. What about linebackers?
All right, well, this is the big question mark, right? We lost Derek Okwune. We got Blake Bean out there, and we moved Fred Scott over. You know, this is the big question mark. And I'm going to say that they're going to be – well, I mean, to be the last season, they didn't really play that well either. Outside of Derek Okwune, did anybody really play well? Can you say that they played awesomely? No, they got caught in the between on coverages. They were late to get into tackles. You know, they got killed on like counter plays. I'm gonna go ahead and say they're gonna play better, just because we have Blake Bean, former Chris Kosh middle linebacker, playing middle linebacker. I'll pick him as my person to watch, just because I want to see what's so great about this guy. Everybody's been raving about him. You know, he has a starting job as a middle linebacker. You're telling me he's good. Let's see how good he is. No, not you. Not you. Okay. I'm saying, you know, the coaches are telling me that he's good by saying that he deserves to start middle linebacker, you know?
Could it be that just Anthony Wallace is, you know, they talked about this on the Go Mean Green podcast, but, they, you know, is he a bust? And you have nobody else to start, so you're like, we got to roll with Blake Bean because Fred Scott doesn't naturally fit that position, or... I'm concerned about the linebacking group as a whole. I think that's, like you said, biggest question mark right now, linebackers. I'm not sure about Fred Scott. I don't even know if he's going to start. My guy to watch is Finney, because I'd have two. I hope Seth Ellis is a starter. There was some talk about him dropping down the depth chart. I hope he's a starter, because I think he's supreme athlete, can do a lot of things for North Texas. And then Finney on the going up against Fred Scott. We saw him in the spring game make a bunch of tackles, play really well in the spring. He's played well in the fall too, camp, from what I've heard. So, again, I think linebackers, they just scare me. I'm just not sure about Bean. I'm at the middle linebacker position. I won't be sure until I see him against SMU.
Yeah. I mean, well, here's the thing. I don't know if we've ever had any kind of discussion about Anthony Wallace, but I mean, he's shown some talent. In certain games, he looks faster than other players, you know, and you're like, wow, that guy, he must be somebody good. Then he's made some really good plays, and other times he'll disappear. You're like, where was the linebackers there on that play, you know, because they just walk right down the middle. So, is he a bust? I mean, probably, yeah. I mean, you would expect him to kind of be in Marcus Trice mode right now. You know, like, that's kind of the ideal transfer, isn't it? Like, at least as far as we're concerned. You come in, maybe struggle a little bit, but then by your senior season, by the later stages of your time here, you know, you're going to be awesome and entrenched as starters, and he's not. So, yeah, you can go ahead and call him a bust right now. I guess officially you can't declare him. Well, he was a bust now that he's finished his senior season on the bench or something, or he washed out of the program completely. But compared to his expectations, yeah. I mean, you expect him to take the gig, and he doesn't have the gig. So, yeah.
So, getting back to it, will the linebacking core be improved from last year?
I think I said...
That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be improved in certain areas and they'll lack in others, and I think that will combine for about the same.
A push. Yeah, I'm going to go with a push, too. Yeah. I think there's too many question marks there to answer that question today.
Yeah.
We don't know about Bean. We don't know Finney against other conference opponents, Division I, or FBS, I'm sorry, opponents. So yeah. I'm going to say they're going to be about the same. I do like their defensive coordinator, Chris Kosh. I think he can coach up linebackers, so there might be growth throughout the season.
Yeah. I think in an ideal world, he coaches him up. Blake Bean organizes the defense amazingly well, and then, you know, everybody kind of slots in, knows their role, and plays above their station, because they just feel super comfortable. And, you know, yeah, that's how I feel it.
Because they look good wearing green. All right. How about the corners? Instead of, we'll do safeties last, but defensive right. backs, corners.
Okay. So the big question mark is the position opposite Kenny Byers. And I'd go ahead and say that both of those are question marks. I love me some Kenny Byers, man. That dude's a baller. I love his physicality. For a long time, one of North Texas' problems, and I'm talking like throughout the Todd Dodge years and like the very beginning of Dan McCarney years, the problem was that they couldn't make tackles on the edges. You could see they would, one, they'd get to the edge, and two, when they'd go up, the corners were not sealing it. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of times they'd flip it out there, a wide receiver would catch it, stiff arm a corner, get 8-9 yards. And you can't have that. One of the great things, and this is probably why Kenny Byers made his way from walk-on to starter and captain, was the fact that he could run up there and make a hell of a tackle. He's not blowing guys up. He's not, you know, he wasn't like Laramie Lee out there, but he was making solid tackles. And I put together a little gif of some of those in that Rice game where I think he made like 5 or 6 of them or something like some ridiculous like that. But that said, he gets beat over the top. And I thought it was telling. I was looking at the SMU write-up, like I was saying, and I mentioned that SMU was aiming for Kenny Byers over the top. And I was like, well, you know, the great thing is the defensive line is getting in there and you know, messing up the quarterback. They hit on that once, and then another time we intercepted it, and another time we forced a fumble because the quarterback had to hold it. I was like, if defense plays like that, you know, they won't be able to hit that deep route. But obviously, the defense didn't play like that. Also, they got probably because they got tired, but they were aiming for that. Every team pretty much looked at Kenny Byers and said, "I challenge you to defend our wide receiver 30 yards down the field." And it became increasingly evident that he was not the greatest at doing that. So, all that to say, I think that we should be looking at both corners and saying, "Hey, can we defend the deep ball? You know, can we make sure that we are not getting beat down the field?" Again, some of that's a function of the defensive line, but that is a question mark. The other side, I'm excited about Jamal Marshall, but obviously, what's the other guy's name? Davis, and then Chad Davis, and then we brought back Zach Whitfield. I think Vito was like, "Well, that kind of indicates some question marks about the cornerback spot." Yeah, it does. But also, I think it just, you know, if you can get a guy that was solid in your program, you're going to take him. If he was solid and he can contribute to your program, he's a known contributor, why would you not have him on the roster? It's not like it costs you any money, like in terms of salary. So, yeah, have him out there. What do you think? Oh, well, I guess the question is, so I'm looking at Jamal Marshall. I want to see what's up with that guy. And will they be better? Will they be better? Yeah, they'll be better. They'll be better performance-wise. Greg, over to you.
Looking at Marshall, because I want to see, can he make the jump? He came in as a corner, went to linebacker, back to corner. Can he make that jump, play high-level FBS football? Because obviously the size, the speed, all that, it just makes you drool as an NFL scout if this guy can play the position and play it well. Byers, concerning over there. He didn't have a great year. I expect him to have a better year this year. But again, my bold prediction wouldn't be shocked if one of the guys like Nate Brooks or Preston, over there challenged him for playing time during the year. Coaches rave about those guys. You watch their high school, their highlights, and not. Obviously, they're highlights, but you just watch their fundamentals in the highlights, and those guys have the ability to play high-level football. So I think that'll be fun to watch. I think our secondary, the corners, will be better than last year. I think that they got burned on a lot of deep balls that they shouldn't have. I think moving Marshall out there, it adds an extra dimension. It, you know, helps us defend against the run because he's a solid tackler, so that's going to be exciting to watch. But the one guy, you know, we've heard, you really haven't heard a lot about this camp was Chad Davis. And a lot of people were, you know, had him penciled in over Marshall. And so when we get that depth chart, whether it's this next coming week or if they don't wait, or if they wait till SMU game week to release it, it's going to be interesting to see, is it Davis or is it Marshall? Or is it one of those freshmen who, you know, how does the two deep look? You know, we know Byers is going to be in there somewhere, but, you know, where do they fit in? The Jackson twins that transferred from New Mexico, kind of interested to see, you know, we haven't heard a lot about them. Do they make it anywhere? So, but yes, corners, they will be improved, and I think they'll be improved a lot because I think the pass rush of the defensive line will help them out a lot this year.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, if you are vulnerable to getting beat over the top, what you want is corners that can keep everything in front of them and tackle things that are in front of them, right? And, you know, like, so you're hoping to get a pass rush with your defensive line only. Maybe an extra guy from a linebacker spot or something like that. And, you know, that's kind of how it's kind of how we played defense with Skladany the past couple seasons. We were not real blitz heavy. We're doing some sometimes, but, you know, we mostly try to keep everything in front of us. And when we got vulnerable, like meaning that we needed to get to quarterback with more than just four, we got beat over the top, and that was pretty bad. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like we have the personnel to do that, to get to the quarterback with their front four, and then we have corners that can make tackles, safeties that can make tackles, linebackers, question mark, but, yeah, there you go. So, all right, let's move on to the safeties now.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
I'll let you begin this one, because I don't know if I have any pressing thoughts on the safeties.
What? I think, first off, safeties will be improved. I think we struggled, and it's nothing against Laramie Lee. I just think that the injuries, you know, and all the hitting that he did, all the bone-crushing hits, it took a toll on him too. And so I think James Gray is a better cover safety than Lee was. He may not be as great against the run, but I think he's going to provide more coverage ability and the chance for more interceptions back there. So I'm excited to watch him because I think his athleticism is off the charts too. And then Keyshawn McClain, he played well at times last year. He adjusted as a freshman. They're expecting huge things from him this year. And so I'm interested, or not really interested, I'm excited to watch that duo back there and how they perform because I think they're going to be better. I think the question marks start to come in, who's backing those guys up at safety? And that's where I'm not sure. You got a guy that a senior, Matthew Dash, he played some last year. It didn't really stand out to me. So then you have the Shalashi kid. He played some, and he struggled.
Yeah.
He has the speed, but he struggled. You have the UAB transfer, Moore, Ja'Kai Moore, and a lot of people thought that he'd come in and push to be a starter, and he's kind of – we haven't heard his name much, so we'll say that. And then you have Cedric Fernandez, who was a walk-on, played well, very well in the spring, and he's obviously a guy that I think will see time, whether, you know, as a corner or a safety.
All right, so when you say they're going to see time, when are they seeing this time? Is it fourth quarter, we need to stop time? Or is it, you know, like we're up 10 or we're down 10, 2 minutes left, you know, or whatever, you know, like?
They will see time regardless of score or, you know, it may be the third series against SMU, regardless of what the score is. You know, it's hot. McClain needs a break for a couple downs. Okay, we're subbing in this guy. That type of thing.
Okay.
If you're on the two deep and Coach Max defense or offense, you're going to play, and you're probably going to play, you know, at least if you're a backup, you're probably going to play 15 to 20 snaps maybe a game. So that's what I expect to see when I say they will see some time.
That sounds good. That sounds about right. Yeah, I just want to clarify that for everyone listening. I guess I can't really say much besides just echoing what you're saying. You know, like I said, I want to see what Keyshawn McClain has. you know, like similar to the tight ends, an A season for me for the safeties is like 3-4 turnovers created, and that includes interceptions and fumbles. You know, not 3 or 4, 5 or 6. That includes interceptions or fumbles. You know, your guide is that the 2013 duo of Marcus Trice and Laremy Lee, where you know, they were flying in, causing fumbles and picking off passes. That's ideal. And I think that's an A. I don't know if that this duo can get to that A level, but I expect like a solid B production from them. Emphasis is on creating turnovers from the safety position. That's where you can fly in and get those passes. That's where you can fly in and hit a guy who's not expecting it and cause a fumble, where you fly in and rip the ball out, that kind of thing. That's where it happens right here. That and on the defensive line when you hit the quarterback. We did it last season against SMU. He got a couple interceptions. Was it two? I think it was 2 interceptions. Yeah. And then forced a couple fumbles. I like to see that. That's what I'm looking forward to. Are we going to do the kicking, the punt team, punt and kicking team too?
Absolutely. We'll call them specialists.
Yeah. Trevor Moore's he's solid. And then our punt game, I hope to not punt.
Yes, our kicker, Trevor Moore, I think he's better than solid. He's all-American-ish.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean by solid. Like, solid. You can trust him. He's going to go down. Like, we get it within 40. It's, you know, 3 points. You know, like, it's great to have a kicker that you trust, you know, wholeheartedly. So I think we have that now, so that's great.
I think our punters between Keena and Masick, they both do a great job. They both have their roles, you know, field position punter and booming punter. I think they do great. So, yeah, our specialist kickers, punters, tops in the conference, my opinion.
Yeah.
Number one special teams unit in the conference is North Texas, whether it's punters, kickers, or returners. I think Darvin Kinsey, if he's a punt returner or if he's a kick returner, he's explosive. We saw him take, you know, at least 2 back to the house last year. You had the guy that they added in as a return specialist, Trey Johnson, the little 5'6", Darren Sproles guy, Waterbug. That guy, kind of excited to maybe see him get some opportunities to return kicks if he does. So, yeah, our special teams blocking kicks, kicking field goals, badass this year.
That's the thing that is, I think it's underrated. I think I'm like the only one consistently tooting that horn, saying that, you know, again, 2013 was awesome for a number of reasons, but the special teams and the defense scored a lot for us. Blocking kicks. We blocked a kick against Georgia, for goodness sake. Last season, we continued that. Returning kicks all the way. Those count. Same number of points as if the offense scores them. Defense last year against SMU, fumble touchdown. Those are huge, and I think it's amazing. It's great that we have such a solid specialists unit. I still don't want to punt ever, but you know.
Sometimes you gotta punt.
Sometimes you gotta punt.
It's just a life. So I think we're running close to our hour, pretty much.
Yeah, we're like an hour and 13 minutes now. Is there anything you want to get in before we get out?
Yeah, just a couple headlines, and then I'll talk a little bit about next week. We saw, you know, with DeMarcus Smith, I don't want to get into too much quarterbacks, but Vernon Adams, the quarterback who just a junior college from Eastern Washington who tore it up, he was named Oregon starter, and he was literally there for 15 days before being named a starter. So it can happen, people. It can happen. Talent and skill wins out at other places. My dad had prostate cancer, and LSU's offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, he just got diagnosed with prostate cancer, so you know, best wishes, obviously, to him. And he said he's going to try coaching or continue to coach this year. So, one other thing, the Fun Belt, they're trying to fill their 12th slot, and they're picking – they're supposedly down to 2 teams between Coastal Carolina and Eastern Kentucky. So realignment. If you could get another team into Conference USA, who'd you want it to be?
Just any old team. I'd probably pick somebody like Texas State.
Texas State? That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, mostly like because they are, I think they're the team that we played most in our history. So it'd be kind of cool to revive that dead rivalry. And also be another chance to see North Texas swing through San Antonio or South Texas. I mean, it'd be in San Marcos, but it's up the road. They have a nice stadium. And your wife.
My wife's a Texas. Yeah, she went there. I sat in their president's booth last year, too, or suite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool. I'd like to see, I mean, it's never going to happen, but I'd like to see North Dakota State. I'm sure their fans already own, like, real estate down here in North Texas because they come to the championship every year in Frisco. So, I think it'd be kind of fun to have the Bison. And if we traveled up there, you get to play indoors. So, that'd be kind of cool.
And yeah, except it's North Dakota, yeah. You can get like a flight to Washington, and you gotta take a little rickety plane with the Wright brothers had, you know, to get out to North Dakota State.
I've flown into why not? So I mean, you could fly with all the oil boom up there. There's airports you can fly in.
They have airports, I swear it.
Speaking of North Dakota State, the first college football action of the season, they play Montana today at 2:30. So if you're looking for a game to watch and don't want to watch high school anymore, you can watch that.
There you go.
And for next week, we will have the preview, the conference opponents, because we didn't get to do it this week. And we'll get into our season predictions for, you know, players of the year, who's going to win Conference USA East and West, all that good stuff. And then we will have Saturday selections the first time.
Oh, man.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's crazy that the first game's coming up, but it's so far away. It's, you know, college football starts, and then we got to wait. We got to look at everybody else play. It's messed up. Are you going to go to a game? Like, I don't know. Is TCU playing at home, or maybe?
I'm going down to Schulenburg. I'm going down to the Berg, if anybody knows where that is. Mm. And I will be watching with my family down there on Labor Day weekend.
Oh, there you go. That's the way to do it. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Go Mean Green. If you want to write in, you're like, you know what? You guys are awful. Let me tell you how it really is. Podcast at meangreennation.com. That's how you get in touch with us. Either of us, I'll forward the email on to Greg, to Gregory, and he'll write you back. We've done that before. So, yeah, that's it. We're done. Thanks for listening, guys.